Welcome back to Movie Chronicles with the Powell Bros. We are on a break this week. It is just me, Trenton's on vacation, so I will be giving you guys just a few little updates before we move into a sneak peek of our patron-only show, mini-reviews with the Powell Bros, and I will just go over a few little things that are going on in the film industry, and then we'll just jump right into that. So one thing that we recently saw was that there was a little, was it like a TV spot of the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer, and they snuck in a little QR code between between Logan's legs as he's walking by, and if you scan it, it just leads to a funny little video of Ryan Reynolds talking, and so yeah, just a fun little thing there. And we got a new trailer for Beetlejuice. It's looking like a lot of fun, looking like a fun movie there. Definitely looking forward to that. And we can continue to watch that as it unfolds and as we get closer to that release. We had Spider-Man Homecoming there because they've been doing all the Spider-Man Mondays. And Spider-Man Homecoming was the last one they just did, and it did so bad. Like, I think they made like $400,000 in like 500 theaters, which is very, very low. And it just kind of, you know, it could be like the fatigue or whatever, you know, less nostalgia. But I mean, we all really know that like the Tom Holland movies lacked in a lot of ways, and a lot of ways that they missed the mark with having, you know, Iron Man be so heavily involved in those and really leading Peter Parker. And so we didn't have that independence from Peter Parker. And it made the movie struggle for sure. And yeah, I think that's part of it. It could just be fatigue of all these Spider-Man movies, and it's not as old as the other ones. So I guess I can give them, you know, credit where credit is due. Yeah, but other than that, not a whole lot going on. Just some little things there. I can't think of anything else that I had. So, yeah, we can just jump right into our mini review. This will be one of our older ones that we did. And, yeah, just to give you a little taste of what we do on our patron-only show and kind of have an idea of what you could be getting if you subscribe to that. We have, I think, 12 mini reviews now, and I think 9 or 10 movie chronicles that were never released to the public. We also have 2 feature films on there that you can watch, made by us, and yeah, and just all 3 of our podcasts are on there, so quite a bit of content on there for you guys. And yeah, so I hope you like it and consider subscribing and supporting us in our mission. Thank you.
Well, welcome, Patreons. Thank you for supporting us up to this point and for joining us behind the paywall and joining us as we move on to our after hours of X2, X-Men United. So I hope you enjoyed that episode, and it was definitely another pretty decent superhero movie. So that was enjoyable to be able to watch. I hope you all enjoyed it, for those that listened to it and those that listened to the podcast and watched the movie. But now we're on to our after hours. So, Tobias, did we have a Stan Lee cameo?
Nope.
We did not.
Nope. And no end credit scene either. And
no end credit scene. Was there an end credit scene in the first movie? I don't think so.
No, there wasn't. There's just a little Stan Lee cameo. A cameo.
Yeah.
So we'll just get right into our Dune Part 2.
Yes.
Mini review. Dune. It'll probably be a pretty long mini review, but
thy podcast succeed and prosper. I don't know.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll talk about Dune Part 2. We both went and saw it in theaters.
Yes.
And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of spoilers, so just warning you now.
Yep. Yeah, spoilers.
So if you want to see it.
Sorry. It's been out not long enough. Yeah.
Not. I don't think, you know, there's not like any like big twists or anything, but we'll be talking about the ending and all that. So if you really care, then yeah, pause it, go watch it, and come back to this. We'll also be kind of talking about the first movie. I know I talked about it already in another mini review, but I didn't really get a whole lot into the story because it was just my first initial reaction to watching it. Like, first initial ever even touching the Dune universe. So it was, like I said, when I did the review, like, it was just hard to follow along and stuff, but visually and all that, it was great. But yeah, this is mostly a Dune Part 2 review, but we will be kind of comparing it and because a lot of the first one does relate to this one and stuff. So
yeah.
So yeah. Trent, do you want to start us off with whatever you want to say?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I've talked about this elsewhere, but I never really into Dune. I'm not big into science fiction, unless like you want to call Star Wars science fiction, which I mean it is, though it's less grounded in like reality, sort of. I don't know if which science fiction is fiction, but like, I think it's Star Trek. It's like Star Trek has an Earth, and like they have a lot of things that like we have in the real world and whatnot. Like Star Wars is completely like alien and foreign, and you know, they're like George Lucas made it a point to make sure that there wasn't very many connections to our world. It was just completely fiction and anyways, I'm saying that because I always try to like put Star Wars in a different category than like Star Trek and then Dune as another one. Though I don't know how to like exactly describe that different category, but either way, there's just more realism in like say Dune than in Star Wars. Now Dune has a lot of similarities to Star Wars, and we'll get into that. At least I would like to get into that. But you don't have this all controlling surrounding force that that binds everything together, and you don't have, well, you don't have lightsabers, you don't have the Jedi, you don't have all these things. You have ancient religions, and those are controlling and manipulating and moving things around in the universe and you know, setting up stories and things, and so you have similarities there, and there's similarities with the characters as well. Dune was written, the book, Frank Herbert, he wrote Dune in the 60s, and he wrote the first book, he wrote the second book, Dune Messiah, and then Children of Dune, Dune God Emperor, you have Dune Chapter House, and I think there's another one that he wrote. I think he wrote six books before he passed away, and then his son went on to write a multitude of other books. There's some prequels, there's a book just on House Atreides and the history of House Atreides and so forth. So there's a whole world and universe of Dune. But like I said, I wasn't that interested in it before a week, 2 weeks ago, or a week ago. I don't know. It hasn't been that long. And
yeah.
When the first movie came out, I was like, okay, it looks all right. It wasn't compelling to me. The trailer, like I say, like the trailers and the marketing is like, some people, that's for some people, but I don't think it's for me. And so I never saw the first movie. And then when the second one came out, I still was like, I'm not that interested. But then I saw some of the trailers and I was like, okay, this is neat. This is interesting. This looks intriguing. And then I started hearing people talk about it and everyone saying just how spectacular the second movie is, and you know, some were saying that it is like all-time best movie ever, best sci-fi ever, better than Star Wars, best sequel ever. That's one thing I heard a lot, better than Empire Strikes Back, better than The Two Towers. So like it was getting a lot of high praise, and I was like, okay, first off, slow your roll. This is I knew it was going to calm down, and it has calmed down. The hype has, because I think people are thinking about it a little more clearly. It's just we've not gotten a good movie in a while. Like, that's one thing to say. Like, we've not gotten a movie on this caliber for almost a decade. I don't even know last time.
The standard is pretty low right now for a good movie. Yeah. Like, it's very, very low. Like, you just have to write a decent movie that doesn't have any agendas in it, and people are going to like it.
Sure. Yeah, decent movies, you know, and this one, based off of a book, so it stays mostly true to the novel. A movie that has just amazing cinematography. It's like, and just obviously, and one thing, like, we can talk about this a little bit, but we can talk about this a little more. But the director, this guy, he cares about the source material. He cares about the universe that he's creating. He cares about the story he's telling. He's been a Dune fan since he was a kid. And so going into this, and he's, from what I've heard, he's talked about and wanted to make a Dune movie and adapt the book for years. And now he's finally been able to do it. He did the first one. He took a little bit of a break. He did the second one. He wants to do a third one. He has a script for Dune Messiah being the third movie, but the second book. So he wants to do, he wants to continue this franchise that he started, that he's made two, I'd say, brilliant, almost masterpiece movies together.
Oh yeah.
For adapting this book. Anyways, going back to what I was saying, so it has that going for it. It's like, people are wanting good stories, good movies, and we got one. And so there's a lot of hype. You know, you go on TikTok and like every other TikToker saying best movie ever, you know, better than Empire Strikes Back, you know, better than this, better than that, as far as sequels go, best science fiction movie and everything. And a lot of it was probably clickbaity, and you know, there's just a lot of hype, but it slowed down a little bit, and people are thinking a little more objectively. The IMDb score for this movie when it first came out was like the highest score ever. It was like 9.7 or 8, or I don't know, it was something kind of ridiculously high. But it was like the reviews were coming in, and people were saying, yep, best movie ever. It started off, I think, with 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, which, you could take Rotten Tomatoes with a grain of salt, but that's gone down. It's still in the 90s, so it's up there.
Yeah,
but so I'm hearing all this hype, and I'm like, okay, there might be something here. Let me dip my toes into this. Like, I knew absolutely nothing about the world of Dune. I know there's a sand planet. I knew there's. There was that. I mean, that's pretty much it. Like, I didn't know anything about it. I knew there's like, you know, a lot of politics involved. There's a lot of houses and things going on. And but I just didn't know. and so I was like, okay, I have an opportunity to go into this movie. One, either knowing nothing about it and just watching the first movie, or two, reading the book first. Reading the book, getting immersed into this world, and then watching the movie. I could have gone either one. I went with the book. I was like, okay, I can read this book pretty quickly. It's a large book, but I listened to the audiobook and a lot of it, and then got a copy of it, read it on my free time, and I got through it in less than a week, and I was hooked. I was like, man, I love this. Like, I can't stop. I can't stop reading this. This is such a good book. And I love this. I love the world building. I love the universe the world that Frank Herbert made, and the characters were intriguing. There were a lot of characters that I just latched onto and I loved. And I loved watching Paul's story arc and his struggle and his downfall and everything. So I was like, I love this book. It's great. I finished the book, watched the first movie. I was like, yep, this is great. This is awesome. I can't wait to watch the second one. Finally was able to watch the second one today. Took me a little bit, just because I've been so busy, but finally able to see it. And I will say that was one of the best theater experiences I've had in a long time. If not one of the best theater experiences I've had probably ever. It was just, I just had a great time. I can't say I've had like just a great time going to see a movie in a while. And
Oh yeah, for sure.
So without getting into the story and anything, like, that's kind of the first thing I wanted to say, just to lead us into talking about Dune Part 2. So Tobias, I mean, do you have anything else to really say?
Yeah, I saw the first movie twice. So I watched it once. I had a hard time following it. So once I got familiar with all the characters, I listened to probably about maybe a quarter or a third of the book audiobook to just give myself some more familiarity with all the characters and all that stuff. And then I watched the movie a second time, and I was like, okay, no, I see what's going on here.
Yeah,
I was familiar with everything. I understood everything that was going on. And what a phenomenal movie. Oh,
The first one?
Like, yeah, I'm talking about the first one right now, not even the second one yet.
Right.
But just a phenomenal movie. And, yeah. So I was very hyped to go see the second one in theaters. Unfortunately, I couldn't see it in IMAX, but still just being able to just seeing it in theaters, like you said, it was just a fun experience in theaters. Just haven't had something like that in a long time, and even with it being such a long movie, like, I still just had a great time, and it was great. For sure. we can go and dive into the story. We're 15 minutes into our 10 minute review, so
I mean, sorry, not sorry, but
this isn't gonna be a 10 minute review.
Yeah, so
it'll be a mini review, informal. We're just gonna be
talked about book adaptations in the past. It's just, that's one thing that's going to come up a lot. Like, it is so hard to adapt a book into a movie. I'm just realizing that more and more. One thing, the only issue I really had with the first movie was stuff related to the book. And it's like, okay, why didn't they include this? You know, this felt like really rushed. They changed this part of, you know, they changed this character. They didn't.
That's what I heard. That's where a lot of the complaints come from from the fans of
books. And I get it. It's like, okay, that's hard. It's hard to judge a movie when you're doing that. However, it is an adaptation, and that's important. Like, you don't just disregard the source material when you're talking about a movie, or when you're going to make a movie based on a book. However, there is I think grace that can be given to the creator. You know, like I said, Villeneuve, butchering his last name. His first name is Denis. I know that. You know, it's Dennis, but Denis, because he's European, somewhere from Europe. I don't know where he's from. I feel bad. I don't know. Anyways, I get it. Like, this guy cares about the book. He loves the book, and so he is making an adaptation that he's trying to be true to the book. But recognizing it, he has his own choices and decisions, and he's going to adapt it in his own way. I've heard people say that this is one of the hardest books to adapt, and almost impossible to do it true to the book. For one, if you include everything, then it's going to be like a 20-hour movie, because there is so much in the book. You have a lot of internal dialogue and internal thoughts that the writer is capturing throughout the book that you just can't translate very well to film. So there was a movie, they made a Dune movie back in the I think it was in the 70s or 80s. It was really weird, from what I've heard, just visually, and there's a lot of odd choices that were made, but it was all right. There was a TV series that someone adapted. I haven't heard much about it as far as how it is, because most people are just talking about the movie adaptations. So Frank Denis decides, you know, I'm going to make a movie. I'm going to adapt this book to movie as best I can. I think one thing he did really well, he did a lot of things really well. He captured the world. The world building was really well done in the first book, or first movie, part one. And I think he did a good job at just capturing the world of Dune, and the planets, the different families, House Atreides, Harkonnens, and then the planets of Dedi Prime and Arrakis, and whatnot. So like, he did a great job, I think, capturing those worlds. And visually, like, the first one is really stunning. I think the visual, there's an improvement with the second one. I like how the both movies have very different tones. The first one being more darker and gray, not gray, but it's a dark, kind of darker tone. This one more light and, like, you know, the bright, orange, like sun, like, you know, tone. I don't know how to explain it, but you see, they're obviously very different toned movies, but they're part one, part two. They're part two is a direct sequel to the part one. Literally, the part two takes place 10 minutes after the first movie. I really need to stay on track. So adapting a book, any book, to a movie is just hard. I think people are trying to do it with TV shows. You have the Harry Potter TV show coming out. They want to do a Chronicles of Narnia. They've done Series of Unfortunate Events that was actually really good. They're doing the Lightning Thief, Percy Jackson. You know, so like, that seems to be like the direction people are going with book/movie adaptations. And great, like, I think that makes sense. I think books are filled with chapters, and each chapter is basically an episode of a TV show. Like, each chapter has, for the most part, has an arc to it, and has a story and whatnot. So it's like, that makes more sense to translate when you try to translate it to a TV show than a movie. Movies have a challenge, because then you have those diehard fans that you know everything about the book, and they want every little detail to be adapted from the book to the movie. And a lot of times they just don't understand how hard that is to do. However, there are some times where the creators of the movie just make terrible decisions and they don't actually understand the characters, they don't understand the world, and they just do make terrible adaptations. So you have both of those. I think Denis has, for the most part, stayed true to the book. And I give a lot of credit to him for doing that. I have a lot of issues with some of the choices he made at the end of the second movie. I'm really confused as to what direction he's going in with the third movie and the second book, if he's going to adapt to Dune Messiah, which sounds like he is, and we'll get into that. So, like, my only flaws with these movies really is the books. I think the first one has some pacing issues. I think they could have ended a little better. I think they should have made the first movie a little bit longer and made the second movie a little shorter, especially because if you look at the book, the first movie covers about almost 3/4 of the book, while maybe say 2/3. Okay, it's 2/3 of the book, and then the second book or the second movie covers the other third of the book. So it's like most of the movie is in, or most of the book is the first movie, and then you have the second movie. Though there's still a lot in each one, and there's a lot that they left out of the second part of the book that they should have put in the movie, and it was still like a 2.5, almost 3-hour movie. So, yeah. So, like, it's
now it, I wonder. It's so hard. I wonder if these have extended editions.
Well, no. So they won't. They don't. Denis has creatively decided, no, I'm not going to release any deleted scenes. You'll never see them. There was one character that they completely removed from the second movie that they filmed scenes for and everything, and he said, you'll never see those.
Wow.
So, like, no, there will be no extended cut. There will be no director's cut. Like, this is Denis' creation. Yeah. He's like, this is my movie.
No, but so these movies, these are on track. Like, and we'll get into it. I know what you're talking about with the second movie, and I'm very concerned too. I haven't finished the book, and I'm already concerned. I looked it up, and I read the differences between the book and the movie.
Okay.
And so I'm aware of that, and I'm very concerned because that's why I looked it up. I'm like, oh, what are they doing with this? Mm-hmm. I don't like that. Like, I'm concerned. Like, what happened in this movie is good and fine. But the direction they could go could be bad, could be good. I haven't read the second book either, so I have no idea. what happens in
it's coming that book. In the mail on Monday, and I am reading it next week.
Oh, nice.
It's a lot shorter. It's like,
oh, okay,
it's like 200 pages as opposed to like 600 pages. It's basically, oh, okay, like the, yeah, epilogue to the Dune book. It's like, here, anyway, this is what happened. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, these, man, these movies, if the third one is as good as these first two, this is on track to be one of my favorite trilogies.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, for sure. Like, Lord of the Rings is, of course, my favorite trilogy ever. But this is on track to be within the top five range. I don't know what my second or third or fourth,
yeah,
favorite trilogies are.
It's gotta be something we'll do eventually. I think I agree. If the third one does well,
but I see a direction it could go, and I'm, mm-hmm, very concerned that it's gonna go that way.
Sure.
And I don't know if we want to get into that yet.
Probably not yet.
So yeah. I don't know.
No, I completely agree. I'm just curious. I can kind of understand, like I said, the third book's shorter, but there's still enough there that they can adapt a movie, and they're trying to add, I think, more another thread to the next one, basically, yeah, between Paul and Shawnee.
Yeah,
where there's conflict there, because there's not supposed to be conflict, but
he said, yeah, no, she's supposed to. So from what I understand, and you correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm, she's essentially in the book she acts essentially as his wife.
Yeah, she's not married, but yeah.
Well, she's a legal concubine, which means wife.
Well, so Lady Jessica, Paul's mom, she was never married to Leto,
right,
but he treated her and basically was a wife. Yeah. It's mostly for political reasons. So, the same thing with Chani and Paul is, I don't think they are actually ever legally married. I mean, she bears his son.
She acts as his wife, basically. and she, you know, is like, she's in like a submissive relationship to Paul.
Yeah.
But then we come to the movie, and that's not at all what's happening. Like, it's, mm-mm, the complete opposite. She's rebelling against him. She's, you know, essentially becoming, by the end of the movie, his enemy.
Yeah, because she disagrees with, she doesn't think that he's the Messiah, or she doesn't believe in the whole prophecy mumbo jumbo, and she thinks that he's believing these lies and going in the direction that she doesn't think he should go in, and she just completely disagrees. And then now he's marrying the princess. I'm blanking on her name, but the emperor's daughter, and making all these political moves in order to restore House Atreides, and basically begin this whole, make choices that's going to begin this holy world, this jihad, as it says in the book. And so he's going in that direction, and she disagrees with that from the movie's perspective. That doesn't happen in the book. They don't have that conflict in the book.
Yeah, and what the concern I have with that, and I don't like that, of the direction they could go. So she's essentially doesn't like that he's a patriarch, is essentially what it is. Like, she doesn't like that he's a ruler and a patriarch, and she thinks, and she even says this in the movie,
uh-huh,
we are all equals here. Like, that's what her tribe is about, is everybody being equals. Like, we're all the same level here. Like, we're all equals.
Yeah.
Like, that's literally what she says in the movie. And so, like, so that's why she's not liking that he's ruling and being a patriarch and being a ruler and a king, mm-hmm, kingly man. And so that's not good. So, like, what I'm worried they're going to do in the second movie is he's going to change and be like, no, you're right. I shouldn't be ruling over these people. We should all be equals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, turn away from that you know, being a king and ruling and being a patriarch and
yeah
and all that.
Right.
That's what I'm worried is going to happen. But if they don't do that and she actually stays as like an enemy to him and she and he has to deal with her as an enemy, then that's like that's good because like no, she's wrong. Like there's no, we can't all be equals. There is a hierarchy of people and like that's how peoples work. That just is. Like you can't just have everybody be equals because then you just have chaos. You have to mm-hmm. have hierarchies and leaders and rulers and kings and queens and patriarchs and you have to have that.
Right.
And you can tell that's why she's not liking him in the movie. It's like that because that's what he's going after. And so if they continue into the third movie that like she becomes an enemy and he doesn't, you know, turn away from that. But if he does turn away from it and be like, no, you're right. I shouldn't be a ruler. We should all be equals. We should all be treated fairly and mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah.
So there's two directions they could go, and why I'm worried. I'm like, man, this could. And if that's the direction it goes, it's gonna ruin the second movie.
It too. Will.
Like, yeah. Not only is it gonna ruin the third movie, it's gonna ruin the second movie, and I'm gonna be like, dang, now we only have one good movie, not three good movies.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I like I said, I don't know much about the second book, so I'll read it and find out. Because one thing that I think this movie did well, the second one, was and what this is also captured in the book is, you know, Paul is not the hero. He's actually kind of a villain, in some senses. Like in that he brought down House Atreides. Yes, he dethroned the emperor who did kill his family and try to destroy put an end to the Harkonnens and is restoring House Atreides which the emperor maliciously sought to destroy and put an end to because he felt threatened by them. And but anyways, all the decisions that he's making in the book really does well capturing this, and I think this movie did well. Because one thing, after the first book came out, Frank Herbert was really frustrated because people were looking to Paul as the hero, and that wasn't the point. He is a messianic figure, but he's one that has been given a lot of artificial power in that like it was manipulated in such a way that he could receive this power because the prophecies that the Bene Jesuits were planting throughout the galaxy were made up. Like the prophecy is made up. It's not real. The Bene Jesuits manipulate everything so that they can seek power and they could produce an offspring that would eventually produce a male who would rise up and save these people and give these people hope and these cultures as they're looking for the Lisan al-Gabib. I think I butchered that. But anyways, and you have like characters like Stilgar is like my favorite character, especially in the book. I do like him in the movie because I love the actor who plays him. I'm blanking on his name.
Which character is that?
Stilgar, the leader of the Fremen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So like
he, I can't remember his name.
I love him in the book. There were some choices they made in the movie that were a little different that I disagreed with. But for the most part, like he is a devoted leader who is holding on to this prophecy and holding on to hope that there is going to be this Messiah who will come and save them. And sadly, it's kind of he's kind of a tragic character in the sense that he's holding on to a false Messiah because it's not a real Messiah. It was a prophecy that was planted by the Bene Jesuits, this female tribe of women, in order to inspire hope in these tribes and these cultures. But one thing I like about Stilgar is that his hope is put in the Messiah, but his hope is for his people. It's for his planet. It's for Arrakis because he wants to see Arrakis become a luscious green planet filled with life. And He has a post-millennial hope. That's opening a can of worms. He has hope that Arrakis can be made new, and you see that with the pools that they're keeping, very pools of water throughout throughout the planet, because those are going to be used in hope. They're keeping those in hopes that either their generation or the next generation or the next generation will be able to use these pools of water to give life to this planet. So, like, there's that aspect of him or of his character that I really like. But then there's kind of a tragic side where it's like, well, he's kind of putting hope in a kind of a false messiah, because Paul is being looked to as this messiah because he's fulfilling all these prophecies. Everything's lining out perfectly. His mom is kind of manipulating it a little bit to make it seem more like that he is the messiah because she wants him to be, for her own personal gain. Which is another difference. Like in the book, she's not as much of an antagonist as they kind of make her seem to be in the second movie, where she's kind of being deceptive and kind of cruel at times. But later on in other books, she does. But that's for other reasons and whatever. Paul is being looked to as Messiah, and then he's been given these visions. He drinks the water of life, and then he has this change after drinking that water, after dying and resurrecting. There's death and resurrection there. Almost pretty much died. His heart rate still pretty to a point where he's basically dead. In the book, he's dead for like over a week or he's unconscious for like a week. They didn't really say how long. Also, the time jumps. There's a 2-year time jump in between these movies at one point. So like after he drinks the water, there's like a 2-year jump because him and Shawnee have a kid who eventually dies. Lady Jessica, the Reverend Mother, her daughter is born, and they don't have that weird like talking to the baby thing. I get why they did that, because in the book, her daughter, even though she's like 2, she pretty much acts and talks like an adult because she was given the knowledge of all the Bene Jesuits of past generations, just like her mom when they drink the water. She drank the water, and so anyways, they switched that. But like, okay, we're not gonna do a time jump, so we'll just have her talk to the fetus, and the fetus talking to her, and then Paul's talking to the baby as well, and it was fine. I get why they did it. Mm-hmm. Anyways, Paul is not supposed to be a hero because he's Frank wrote that character in order to show that oftentimes people put their hopes in false messiahs. I don't know much about his past. Like in the book, you know, he quotes scripture a lot actually, and I don't know like if he might have like a Catholic background or something, but anyways, he talks about it, the point of Paul is to show that some people put their hope in false messiahs that can't actually save or give people or put expectations upon people that are going to let you down. Paul
in the movie, like he for most of the movie, I think it was until he drank the water of life.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
He exclusively was saying like, I'm not the Messiah. I don't want to be the Messiah. Right. I'm just trying to help these people and whatever. And then he drinks the water, and then that's when he kind of starts to like, I think he stops saying it, and then he's kind of like living up to like, oh, I've got this following. Yeah. I think he kind of convinces himself like I am.
Yeah.
But he doesn't ever actually say it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, he pretty much convinces himself, and he takes upon that mantle, takes that responsibility, and becomes the leader that the Fremen were wanting him to be, and that I think they needed him to be, and in order to stop the Harkonnens and stop the Emperor, and to plan out that whole plot to get the Emperor to come to Arrakis and whatnot. So like, and so that was the kind of the big change in that he needed in that story, which I thought was really well done for the most part. It was more, it was better done in the book, and there was a lot more to that, and it, I think it made it a little more impactful in the book, but it was, I think it was good in the movie. So anyways, Paul is being given these expectations, and he's realizing he has choices that he needs to make, but he also knows if he goes down this certain path, which I think they dealt with a lot in the first movie, but if he chooses a certain path, it could result in millions and millions of people dying. Like, the choices he make, like, a lot of things hinge on him being, just disregard the fact that he's a Messiah, being the fact that he is a survivor of House Atreides, and now he's given this opportunity to bring down the Harkonnens and then take the mantle of Emperor, which they tease, like, in the first movie, I think, which is really good, and helped develop that throughout the second movie, and then he takes upon that mantle and becomes the Emperor. And then all the houses in the movie are not accepting of the marriage when he takes the political marriage of him and the princess. But anyways, the decisions that he makes and the choices he makes and the path that he goes on is going to result in the death of millions and millions of people. And he has to live with that and deal with that. And the second book, from what I've heard, delves more into that, where it helps us see that, you know, he is actually kind of a villain in some senses. I don't know if he has a redemption or not. You get a lot of that in this movie, I think, as he is becoming very self-focused on him being the Messiah and having to make these choices and realizing, okay, like, even him talking about going south, he's like, he knows that that's the path. So it's like, I don't want to go south. I'm not going to do this. And then he chooses to, and then that continues down the path that will result in him and these prophecies being fulfilled and these visions being fulfilled and him making choices that could destroy many lives. So
you're saying because he's making these decisions that could kill all these people, like, that's where he's becoming the villain,
kind of,
because I feel like he is trying to, like, he wants to be the Messiah for these people because he wants to be a leader for them, that the leader that they need, and he's trying to help these people.
Well, yeah, there's both, and like, he wants to help his planet, he wants to help these people, but he also knows the consequences of his ultimate actions, of him becoming the Emperor and then starting this war. Like, that's the issue, is that the choices he makes. Because
he's starting this war. Right. Yeah.
He didn't have to become Emperor in order to save the Fremen and save Arrakis for the most part. I mean, the Emperor could have maybe continued to plot against him. And so there's a lot there.
I think he did have to become the Emperor, because if he didn't, well, he had to essentially avenge his family by dethroning the Emperor.
Sure, yeah.
And getting this evil man out of a position of rule. Like, he couldn't leave him in that position of rule, so he had to dethrone him. And that's how he avenged his family. And he spared the man. He didn't have to kill him.
Yeah,
and in that's the true. End, and yeah. And if he didn't become the Emperor, then the girl was going to become the Empress. And she's, you know, the daughter of the evil guy. Like, I feel like he was in a position where he had no choice but to become the Emperor by that point.
So, like, I'm trying to remember, because I think they dive a little more into that in the book, and you have a lot of people telling him.
So, like, why in the movie? In the movie, though, where do you see him being a villain?
Right, it's not really villain, and, like, it's more anti-hero in that the choices he makes.
Because I think he's affect others. While I'm watching, of course, any ruler that is a ruler, he's going to be in a position where his decisions do affect people, and sometimes you do have to make hard decisions, and try to make the best decisions, even though sometimes you make decisions that might hurt people, but that's kind of the position of a ruler. And that's where I'm afraid that this third movie is going to go, is saying that, you know, a ruler, because a ruler can make decisions that will hurt people or can make a bad decision, means there should be no rulers at all. And yeah. I think that's where they're going to go with that third movie.
Yeah. And I think, like, this is, like, once again, I'm a week into this. I knew nothing about Dune a week ago. So, like, I'm still, like, trying to piece this all together. Yeah. Because I think the issue is he knows that he's not the Messiah. He knows that it's all fake. He knows that it's all propaganda. And yet he's using that as by taking on that mantle.
Do they say that it's all fake in the movie?
Yeah, the Reverend Mothers, I don't think they say it's fake to in that. Movie. Well, there were a couple times where they talk about how, well, Paul does, like, he says, like, it's all...
Yeah, he says it's fake and stuff, but...
Because...
I think the way... So, I haven't read the book, so I think that's the difference between... I think you're seeing it different.
I'm sure I am, yeah.
And in the movie, it seems like we as the audience are supposed to be questioning, is he really the Messiah? Like, are these prophecies real or not?
Right.
And so, like, it's supposed to be, like, a struggle between that. And then we see him in this position where he believes it's not. Like, he's like, no, this is fake. But at the same time, he's fulfilling all these prophecies and everything's alluding to him being the Messiah.
Yeah.
And he's in this position of rule too, where he's trying to lead these people to protect them and to free them from the reign of terror from the emperor.
Right.
That he's been pushing onto these people, and in the end of the movie he frees them. Like he takes down House Harkonnen, he dethrones the emperor, like he does everything.
But then he also starts a war, though. And this is the other thing, and I'm curious. That's why I want to read the second book. So in the second book, at the end, the houses are actually in agreement with the marriage because they actually fear him as the leader of House Atreides. In the movie, they for some reason decide no, they're against the marriage, and so therefore they need to go fight. So. From the movie's perspective, I think they maybe try to make more sense of it. I just know, like, Denis, I've seen some interviews, like, he's talked about how he did actually want to capture the fact that he is not necessarily the hero, as a traditional hero, because people have described him as kind of like Darth Vader. And I feel like kind of the change was in the movie, and I need to go see it again, like, but in the movie, I think it was really the scene where he got up and gave that speech in the cave to all the Fremen. And he was inspiring them and getting them ready to go and do the right thing and go fight. But see, this is where I'm kind of off track a little bit. Because I remember I felt like there was like a drastic change in his character where he became more focused on
after he drank the water of life, he became hyper focused on his mission. But I don't think it makes for a villain arc and nor anti-hero or anything. Okay. Like, I think he really is, like, he enters like this higher position of knowledge, and so he's more aware of things that are happening. He can see the future better and stuff like that, and so he knows what's going to happen. And so I think the only thing, like, questionable thing that he's done is he starts this war, but his motives all the way up to there, like, have been to help people, have been to free these people from this oppressive ruler that's been, you know, just then, you know, just using their planet for his money and wealth and his own selfish reasons. And while Paul comes in and frees them from that, and they're free to have that planet now to themselves and whatever, he does start this war. What it ends up being and all that, like, I it seemed like his motives, even I can't remember what his motives were to start the war, other than because I don't remember if, like, the other houses had any malicious intents or anything like that.
Yeah, well, because, well, in the movie, they make it clear that the houses are not in agreement with this marriage, meaning they don't accept his rise to the throne. And, right, and so they're going to rebel against him in that way. And so, I don't know.
I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to, like, I think even that, like, he's trying to restart this thing that all these political, money-loving people mm-hmm. have created, this whole empire, right. Should I say?
Yeah.
This whole empire that they've created that's all been around spice and controlling spice. And,
oh, that was it.
If you control spice, you control the world.
Right. So in the book, he threatened to destroy all the spice on Arrakis, and that's why all the houses.
Oh, he did that in the movie too. So
all the houses side with him because they're afraid that if they don't side with him, he's going to destroy all this. So he's so that was it. They captured that a lot better in the book, where you do see it's like, okay, he's kind of being a little bit malicious. Even Stilgar was like, I think there was some conflict there with Paul. He's like, no, like, why would you even consider doing that? Like, this is my planet. Like, we need the spice. Like, we can't live without this on this planet. And the resource that it is to the galaxy. It's like, you can't just get rid of it. But he's so quick to be like, oh no, I'm gonna get rid of all this unless all the houses agree with me. And so it's just a lot of the choices he makes and the motives, I think, come out more in the book. And maybe this is one thing I need to think about more as far as the movie. There were a lot of decisions he made that, and against the wisdom of other wise leaders that are like Stilgar and even his mom. There was a lot of more conflict between him and his mom in the book and whatnot. Like, all these other people are telling him, no, like, you're going about this the wrong way. But he's like, no, this is the path I need to take. But he knows that path is going to lead to starting a holy war, starting a jihad. And yet he's going to do that anyway, because he thinks that's the messianic path. That's the path that he needs to take in order to fulfill the prophecy. So he takes that mantle and chooses to go that path, even though the book, I think, assumes that it's actually not the right path and that there was a better path.
Right.
Though that better path may not be very clear
The movie doesn't make that clear, and they make it, mm-hmm. they paint Paul as the hero, and they paint, the emperor and of course all the other people as the villains.
Well, they are the villains, and so like that's so don't get me wrong, like I'm not that's not what I'm saying, like,
defeats the villains, right. And then, but it kind of paints the picture that in the third one, like, what I'm hoping is that, like, he continues to be the hero and mm-hmm. he makes good decisions, and you know, he repents of the mistakes that he makes, you know, he's not a perfect messiah, and then Chani is like essentially his enemy, because she's gonna start down a path of, trying to fight him off and trying to stop him from doing the things he's doing.
Right.
And stop him from being a ruler. But a lot of his decisions that have been made in this movie, like, I don't think any of them were malicious or anything like that. And he is trying to do the best the best in mind for these people. And he is trying to free everybody. That's his goal. It seems like his freedom. But with this war, like, what, like, how much of it does he know? Does he know for a fact that everybody's going to die? Like, is that all aware to him? It doesn't seem like that's very clear in the movie. Hmm. And so that's why I think when the third movie comes out, a lot of what happened in the second movie is going to become very clear. And we're going to understand a lot more.
Right.
And maybe even in the book, I don't know if the book will, like, when you read it, if you're going to be able to understand more and know what direction, have an idea of what direction. I mean, I assume you would, assuming he doesn't go way off track of that. But anyway, with that said, I think we should stop here and do a part two to Dune part two.
I think we should. That's a great idea. There's a lot.
I think so. We're an hour into this.
Oh, boy.
So Next week, you guys can expect Dune Part 2, Part two. Mini review. So, yes. Yeah, we're going to stop here. And,
let's do that.
Yeah, so
we're very novices on Dune,
the other half of this.
We're enjoying what we're learning about. And
yeah.
And maybe I'll have more to say next week. I mean, related to our topic, and then continue more because there's a lot more I want to say about the movie visually and
the
score.
I want to talk about Elvis's performance in that.
Oh yeah, Austin Butler. Guy killed it.
Austin Butler, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Anyways,
we got to talk about that, and yeah, there's a whole bunch more that happened in the movie that besides just the ending and Paul's intentions and all that. If I have the time, I'm going to go see it again. I don't know if I will, but...
Yeah, same.
I'd like to, but yeah. We'll continue with part two next week, and again, we appreciate your guys' support, and we love making this stuff for you guys and talking through this, and this is, you know, completely... We don't have any outlines for this, really, just our notes from when we saw it, so it's kind of fun to just... talk about a movie and work through it, and especially one so like this, these movies are so dense and so packed full of so many a lot of themes and meanings and a whole lot of stuff, and so it's, and that's what makes these so great too. And yeah, we're not sure what direction this is going to be heading. So, Trent's going to read Dune Messiah, and maybe I will too. Maybe I'll listen to the audiobook or something while I'm at work. And yeah, we'll see. But yeah, Dune Part 2 mini review next week. So again, we appreciate your guys' support, and we look forward to that.
Definitely.
So thank you guys. Goodbye.
Bye.